kinds of ideas exist. And the third thing I'll say is that in our experience, where we often get to redo code that someone else has written, we find inefficiencies that make things take 50 to 100 times longer than they need to. And this comes from the fact that one has to recognize that transportation modelers are not software people. They're just not. And so they do things that make very little sense. And it's a shame, but it's not something that one can't just fix this. This is a kind of a serious community problem.
Totally agree.
Yep, totally agree.
Well, I'll give it a shot with this next presentation. So.
It'll be getting better. Yes, we do. Josh, what the recent improvement?
Don't use mine as an example.
How much does it improve your runtime?
Huh?
The populations inside of the revisit you add to the code?
Oh, yeah, it runs in like 30 seconds. So.
30, yeah.
So it took it from, an hour to 30 seconds. So there you go.
But nobody said that transportation people should know computer science, and computer scientists should know transportation. You just have to work together.
Well, we tried to say that with the Eiger, right?
That.
So we tried to say that with NSF project.
You found it easier to learn programming yourself rather than teaching computer scientists.
Until now, computer scientists were 5 times more expensive, but now they don't find the right jobs. It's about time.
My initial experience with Los Alamos was they did terrible things. They knew nothing about transportation and developed codes, but.
Well, we had a program for 5 years funded by NSF, computational transportation. That's all we tried to do, to train computer scientists.
It was supposed to the cross-disciplinary idea. Yeah.
But Mike, please.
Okay. How do I get to show my presentation? I can just start talking, but people will be a little confused.
Are you a computer scientist or
a computer scientist?
I'm not going to answer that one.
Is it turned off there?
Is the projector?
Yeah, there goes sleep.
You can't see the function, I think.
I think it has a timer.
It's
probably on
I don't know.
Your
end
of the
what about power?
I don't know. It's plugged in.
So much pressure.
A function F8?
Can you? Is there a Windows P? Switch it.
So by the time these people try to figure out answer the other question, you raise your hand.
But it was just working. Why would it switch?
I never hit it.
Did you change anything?
Put the flag up. Put it back on again.
Say project on.
Well, actually, since they're fixing that, David,
no, the light isn't on. So.
We
think the projector's off. So. Yeah.
Stuff and iteration, like we, especially when we run it with our integrated land use problem,
we'll certainly take the
convergence way down on the early iterations of highway, our static highway assignment. But what I'm actually worried about is we found that not running our DTA model to a more robust convergence can greatly vary the OD travel times. As we have more integrated models, it actually is probably more important. And that's just an observation that we made. I'm sure that, I don't know that it's necessarily correct, or there might be something wrong with our DTA model too, but.
No, I think it's correct because, variable. And the queue is there, and the queue clears, and so forth. And so each loading may manifest itself with the bottleneck in a slightly different time period.
Right.
So as I said, the problems are worse in the DTA world.
Definitely worse.
Yeah.
And as mentioned earlier, I think if you're doing an OD of a given traveler, that's pretty stable. But the link volumes and link speeds do change a lot. And if you have to reskin the whole skin matrix, then it makes a difference.
So I'll make another comment.
Yeah,
we've been doing a lot of work with. Much
did you
higher
and
fidelity
unplug and plug it back in?
Let's
see if it works. What happened?
And we're
just,
finding
just
stop working.
Shut down.
The run times are just perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
And part of this is the old thing that
people say,
if you have some number of millions of vehicles, you only have to deal with them. Whereas if you have 200,000 by 200,000 origins and destinations, so that's, you know, just an insane number of paths, you don't need all these. So all the logic for why micro-simulation and the travel simulator works, it applies. And as I said, even with the tenth of a second resolution, the running times are very acceptable.
Okay, finally we got these slides fast.
All right, I'll wait for...
We're
good.
All right, I'm good? All right.
We're good.
Okay, so my name is Michael Hope. I work on a team with other guys from Argonne National Laboratory. So Josh Wald, Vadim Sokolov, Quillen Jung, and Hubert Lai is our project manager. So this is, you know, I think a pretty, you know, good presentation to end on, because it really... it's really trying to bring everything people have said together, you know, in some sort of agreeable way. And you know, whether or not we're going in that direction or not, you know, it still will serve as a good basis for discussion, I think. So, what is Polaris? We received survey mandate from FHWA. You know, we had been doing a lot of case studies and a lot of, you know, technology transfer stuff, but this is sort of our first opportunity to do some development. So what FHWA was interested in is they said, okay, you know, we have a lot of cities that are going around and wanting to assess whether or not they should put a traffic control center in, you know, and how they evaluate the economic impact of that. And, you know, and he's like, you know, we can go to all these different models, but you know, they all have a pretty hard time integrating something like this, just because it's such a fundamentally alien concept from a lot of the existing models, you know, and a lot of the existing technologies. So, you know, it's the sort of thing that it's becoming popular. So, we should have the modeling community look into this. And the other thing is that we have, you know, tons and tons of different transportation tools. And, you know, it strikes them as pretty important that they're able to play together. So interoperability is another big concern for them. So, you know, they came to us with these two sort of things, and we, like, you know, we thought about it, and, you know, as usual, we tried to be as ambitious as possible. So, you know, we started looking more to, you know, what are the, you know, what are really the core things going on in the transportation community? You know, what does FHWA really want? You know, if you're going to give us funds, then, you know, we'll try to do more for you than, you know, than just what you're asking. We'll try to, you know, bring some sort of more consolidating framework out of it. So the core philosophies are fairly simple. You know, the first major one is to develop transportation modeling standards and protocols, and that says a lot of this pretty well. You know, the idea is that you know, there are a lot of different implementations of similar concepts, and so, you know, instead of redoing that work, finding some way to just really express it one time and then, you know, reuse the same language among all of us, you know, because it just makes a lot more sense to not have to reinvent the wheel for certain cases. Of course, in many cases you do, but we'll get into that a little bit later. The project is targeted to be open source, so the idea is that it is a model tool. You know, it is a community tool. So, you know, we want people to use it. We want essentially you know, people to use the model development environment and use our concept repository. We want people to add to our concept repository. You know, you know, if everyone can get on the same page, then, you know, maybe things get done a little bit faster. We were very, very interested in seeking out opinions from and actively listening to the transportation community because, I myself am not a transportation guy, so I'm a computer guy. So, you know, first of all, I have to apologize if I ever misspeak because, you know, I really don't know all my stuff in transportation, but I'm trying to learn. So, we've had sort of a negative perception about research labs that you know, they'll bring in like physicists and nuclear engineers and try to do transportation, but, you know, ultimately they don't end up listening to the community. So, you know, we want to sort of buck that common perception and really try to, really try to get at the heart of what people in the transportation community are looking for. Then the next thing is, this is a very, very important one for, people who are academic researchers, people who, you know, have a little bit of interest in programming, but, you know, essentially don't really have the heart to spend all of their waking hours putting together a full model, is we really want to make it a target to separate model functionality from computational logistics. So this is, in some ways, one of the core principles. So when I say computational logistics, I'm saying, you know, kind of like looking around for a variable, you know, worrying about, you know, how I am reading a file, you know, worrying about where a variable lives, worrying about how do I parallelize it, and all these different questions, you know, because fundamentally a lot of people just want to implement a concept that they have, that they've come up with, and they want to see whether it works or not, you know, and they don't want to worry about re-implementing an entire integrated model to do that. So we do that by offering tools and structure, but we don't want them to inhibit the flexibility of the developer, the code modularity, or the performance of the final application. So, you know, sort of take a little bit of a page from the programming language philosophy, you know, like C or C++, in that you offer structure and, you know, ways to improve your modularity and performance, but you don't obligate users to use it. And then finally, to foster cooperative model development among many diverse groups. So, you know, essentially it would be a really cool thing to have multiple groups essentially working on the same software repository, you know, using similar language. So, you know, a lot of these are, you know, kind of highfalutin ideas, and, you know, they're a lot of them are pipe dreams, but, you know, they're I don't think bad pipe dreams. So there are a number of trends in both in transportation and outside of transportation community that are really shaping what transportation simulation can do. And David touched on one of these, and other people have touched on others as well, but the idea is that the models that people want to do are becoming more complex. So, you know, people are interested in saying, okay, what's the impact of hybrids? You know, what's the impact of emissions? You know, what, in our case, what is the impact of 3CI sensors? So in addition to that, you have more and more technologies sort of growing into the transportation realm. So, you know, we're always getting like, oh, you know, now we have a new Bluetooth sensor. You know, now we have a new way of estimating, you know, essentially the travel congestion by, you know, essentially tracking people's cell phones. You know, it's, you know, all these new, you know, the actual transportation landscape is at this point shifting somewhat rapidly. So you have, in addition to that, you have, you fortunately have computational capabilities that have really crossed a major milestone, I'd say, in the last 5 years. And the two core points there is moving to 64-bit memory architecture, which allows you to have huge shared memory machines, and also multi-core processors. And that trend is going to continue. So 64-bit machines have tons of memory capacity, and the multi-core machines are just going to keep, over the years, see an addition of more and more cores. I mean, they may be organized a little bit differently as time goes on, but that's still fundamentally the idea, is to give people a little shared memory cluster as their desktop. So in addition to that, you see advances in data collection, intelligent transportation technologies, the things I said before, that, you know, we have a lot more at our disposal to put into comprehensive models. And then finally, there's very matured research in fields that are, you know, sort of like cousin fields, and, you know, very highly applicable to a lot of the stuff that transportation modeling does, such as artificial intelligence, agent-based modeling, computational sciences, and, I might get laughed at, but video game design. You know, I mean, video games have, I found, a lot to tell us about how to write a transportation simulation. You know, if you think about an average video game, they are at their heart, you know, very much like a discrete event simulator. So the video game engines are a strong place to look for performance reasons. So what are the common conceptual threads in transportation models? So the interesting thing is that the transportation models will often, you know, they're often differ sort of in, you know, everyone's trying to describe a very similar system with very similar objects, you know, very similar, you know, travelers, traffic signals, vehicles, roadways, but, you know, everyone has a different way of organizing that those concepts, and everyone has a different way of organizing the behaviors and talking about which behaviors you want to model, which ones you don't, what attributes are there. In addition, you often see very often some form of a discrete event simulation. So you see some sort of evolution of this multi-agent system to, you know, essentially develop sort of more of a trained intuition about what happens in the real world. So, you know, you begin to see these efforts, you know, in a lot of the other presentations, that a lot of them have a discrete event simulation as part of them. In addition, there are quite a, you know, they are, you know, there are often iteration routines that will calibrate model parameters to see optimal or, you know, equilibrium or, you know, real-world solutions. And then finally, you know, probably the most important point is that a lot of the differences between these models isn't in what they're trying to describe, it's just in the level of aggregation or disaggregation, because they're interested in different problems fundamentally, or they're interested in the same problem, and, you know, the, for computational reasons, they'll either aggregate or disaggregate these concepts. So who do we see as the Polaris user community before you even know entirely what it is? Transportation researchers are, you know, a major one. You know, as I said before, just looking for, you know, researchers in individual fields to come and contribute their ideas and contribute to sort of a central concept knowledge database about, you know, what the, you know, best functionalities are for various, you know, for various common objects, various common behaviors. Integrated transportation. Oh, keep going? All right, yeah. So this is the Polaris component view. So you have sort of at the base you have a core library, and then this is going to do a lot of the stuff, a lot of the you know, what I call code logistics. So, you know, a lot of the data layout, memory management, parallel execution scheduling, all of that stuff that lives really close to the heart of the CPU. On top of that, you build the transportation ontology model, or TOM. And essentially what this is this seeks to be sort of an ontological representation or a concept database of transportation system components. Next, you have a transportation functional library, or TFL. And this is essentially a description of the functionality. So in the transportation ontology model, you might have something that's called git route. But, you know, there are a lot of forms of git route, you know, and they all are functionally, you know, a little bit different. And so that's what the transportation functional library will distinguish. Next is the transportation object library. So this is saying, okay, you know, I need these data members in order to make my stuff happen. So you have an idea of the functionality, but it's essentially independent of, you know, the data that's associated with it. So that you essentially will write the data layout to the functionality that you want. And these all feed into the transportation simulation framework. So this is sort of the user going in and saying, okay, I'm interested in these pre-configured building blocks, I'm interested in these concepts, I'm interested in these functionalities, and I want to sort of weave them all together into a model. And then the actual execution will happen in the execution module. So this is essentially the component which will kick everything off and start it running. So to give a little bit of an example of how the transportation ontology model works is, so if we start with a top-level object called an element. So, you know, this is just sort of a conceptual idea to get you thinking about how strong this sort of concept is. So an element, you could say, is essentially anything in the transportation system. I mean, you know, a signpost, you know, some sort of route behavior, some sort of, you know, I don't know, roadway, you know, they can all be called elements. You can divide those into entities and faculties, meaning that entities are sort of the top-level description of what you're talking about. So I'm talking about a roadway, I'm talking about a sign. And faculties are really composite objects of that entity. So the idea being that, okay, I have a traveler, and he has a get route faculty. He has a faculty to look around him. You know. So it's essentially saying I have this same top-level entity that's pretty much undisputable, but I want to organize what that thing does in different ways. So the entity is, for instance, we can call one type of entity a directable agent. And what does that mean? It just means that I have some destination chooser faculty. So, you know, the exact form of that faculty doesn't really matter yet. We're just talking about the concepts. Or similarly, maybe we'll write a destination chooser faculty. And, you know, we have two names in here. We have a get destination and we have a network destination name. So the ontology model really seeks to essentially give those standards and protocols for names, you know, say that, you know, why not always call it a traveler, you know, instead of calling it a bunch of different things. So it's sort of a linguistical ontology as well. So when you have a, you know, destination chooser, you know, perhaps you have a fast destination chooser or a robust destination chooser, just sort of random names. And, you know, fundamentally, the idea is that these should still, you know, have some of the same capabilities and understandings that the original destination chooser had. And, you know, you might even be able to call the function the same thing. You know, you may say that, okay, this is get destination, and it has the same name, but, you know, it's a little bit more evolved. Similarly, you know, you can have a routable agent, which, you know, it has some destination chooser and some route chooser. So we can do the same sort of path with a route chooser, you know, that you have sort of like a route chooser, and it's mainly a way to agree on the names within the component, or, you know, or some agreement about the organization of the component. So next I'm going to talk about the component construction process in Polaris. So we had mentioned that the transportation simulation framework is kind of where it all comes together. So I'm going to go kind of step by step of the different, you know, the actual modularity involved. So, the first thing is you want to describe and overload or overload the concepts of interest to this component. So this is sort of what you saw happening in the previous slide, is you say, okay, I have some get route function. I have some variable X, you know, I have some variable speed. So you're just talking about components. You're not adding data members yet. You know, you're not adding, what those things are. You're just adding concepts to the system. So standardized data and function accessories would fall into this category, or standardized, essentially, having a get X, you know, instead of saying I have int X, you know, so it's sort of a different, more functional approach, I want to call get route instead of saying I have function get route, and the idea is to put a layer of intermediate abstraction between you and the data or functions you're communicating with. So, of course, you can build, you know, when things are in more functional terms, you can very easily inherit because there's no overhead. So, you know, I can inherit all the functions I want, and the compiler will just optimize the ones I'm not using. The next part is to describe and overload the functional and transmutation behavior of this component. So transmutation is a large word, but the fundamental idea is the functional stuff is saying, okay, using these concept words, what am I doing? You know, and you use only concept words. You don't use any of the actual variables. And then the transmutation is sort of where the magic happens. So that's the idea is it will, you know, if you request data or you want to call a function, the transmutation portion will resolve what that means. So the idea is there's sort of this separation between saying, okay, you know, my function does conceptually this. Now, given that I'm using this data or, you know, this arrangement of objects, this is how I want to actually resolve getting X, you know, calling this function. So, because, you know, depending on how you want to structure your program, it could live in a bunch of different places. And so you want to essentially allow the software to help resolve what the differences are between your approach and the standard approach. So, you know, similarly to concepts, you can inherit functionality and transmutations with, you know, no real overhead because, you know, they're not variables. So you can, you know, inherit, you know, 18 types of get routes and it's fine. You know, I mean, they may not all work if you try to call them, but, you know, the fundamental idea is that you can inherit them. So with that, you'll get sort of an associated set of concepts as well. Because when you inherit the functionality, you also inherit the concepts that's interested in. And then finally, you do the final portion which actually makes everything run, which is essentially to define or overload the data layout and known external types. So the idea being that you have, okay, now when get X, you know, does something, I need to actually determine, you know, what does X, you know, where does X finally live? You know, does X live in this class? Does it live in some other random class? So you actually put down X and resolve what does getting X mean for this particular model. So data layout is variable type and location. And known external types is essentially a named type def which lives in the body. So it says, okay, I know that I'm communicating with a router, and it's this type of router. Or, you know, I know that I am this type. So, you know, similarly to the other two, you can inherit the data. You know, you can say that, okay, I want to build my data layout on top of this other data layout. And so you get the data, and you also will get the data's functionality, and you'll get the functionality's concepts. So you see there are many points of modularity in this design that, you know, you can swap out concepts, you can swap out functionality, and you can swap out data. So some specific developer tools that are targeted to provide, that Polaris is targeting to provide is a lot of things that...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Can you just wrap it up quickly? Because we just, it's 7-8 minutes to five and...
Yeah, this is like, you know, last slide, so... yeah, so the you know, you'll have a high-performance memory manager, you'll have an automated data placement service, you'll have a task scheduler that does resource constrained task scheduling, you'll have an adaptive dependency-aware task execution engine, and this is an important one, your parallelization will be automated, and so anything that you write within Polaris using the Polaris philosophy will automatically be parallelized. You'll have compile-time polymorphism as opposed to runtime polymorphism, and finally you'll have thread-safe data structures that you'll be able to use. So this is sort of the long view is, you know, to move from proof concept to integrated model case study, doing a limited release, to essentially refocusing on usability and improvements, improving the core algorithms, doing stress testing, beta testing, and then finally doing the technology transfer and working on community adoption to, you know, create user and interaction and collaboration faculties, and then run training courses. So that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any clarification questions for Michael?
What's the actual timing of those phases?
I think we want to get, I think we would like to get, you know, a little bit into phase two within, you know, the next year and a half. You know, we have everything about, you know, maybe like 85%, 90% designed to do what I presented. And so it's a matter of implementing that and beginning to put together some of these concept databases for people to contribute to. Yeah.
Are you designing your own development environment for the programmer or sort of putting these as tools inside an existing IDE?
It's inside an existing IDE. So one of the targets for the initial thing is to sort of have a sort of an expanded C++ that, you know, will utilize macros and whatnot to give you a lot of this structure. You know, and then it's a big target to get a lot of IDE support as you use things. However, you know, it's not really the final goal. You know, the final goal being that we would like to follow the example of, say, like a Repast or, you know, one of these discrete event simulators and give people GUIs or some sort of programming language that they can use to more easily implement these things.
Or put a higher level language like Python on top
right.
of it. So simplify, you know, your job so they don't have to deal with C++.
But some people might like it. Will they have the options?
Yeah, that's the whole thing. Is that whatever's written in the GUI or in the high level language will be translated ultimately to the same C++ code? That's why we're developing it first. So, So we know what we're wrapping around with. Yeah.
So what's your requirement for proof of cost? To have a case study and show what you can do?
Right.
Which means a geographical case study.
Right.
And collaborators to give you functionalities and that type of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So do you have an idea of how you want to get these collaborators? Do you want us to tell you...
do you already have?
Yeah, your partners. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Is that why we're doing all this?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. I'm assessing.
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.